When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Before there was IMDb.com, there was Zach and Dustin.
You know those guys who think they know everything about a movie without having to go on the internet to look it up? Well, that's us, but maybe only for the years 1981 through mid-1989.
No, I'd say late 1978 through early 1992. Either way, we know movies. And even more specifically, we know soundtracks from those movies.
Yeah, this is $2 Late Fee with Zach and Dustin.
This is the podcast where we pick a movie and soundtrack from our youth that we loved and see if it still holds up today.
All in the spirit of positivity and togetherness. Thanks for listening. On to the show. Hello, $2 Late Fee friends. It's another wonderful episode. We're so glad you're with us. And listen, we know shit is dark. Let's just say it what it is. Say it. Just get it right out there. You know, the world is on fire, people are dying, and it's hard to have hope right now. But I think we got to focus on the positive. Zach, what do you think?
I agree. I think we have the opportunity to create some mindless distraction at a time when we all should be super focused and present on what's going on. But there's also a time to laugh, and there's a time to reminisce, and a time to be carefree for an hour. And I think that's what we're going to do for the next hour with Joyce Heiser Robinson. Many people know her from Just One of the Guys. I mean, that's where we know her from. But we also know her from a lot of other things, too. But she left all that behind and focused on working with kids. And it's a really beautiful arc in our interview where we get into that. And I think that's more relevant than anything else is. You know, she's very much on the pulse of what's going on today, politically, actively. And we talk a little bit about that. She's kind of the perfect guest to have on at this time because she reminds us that while it's important to be very present and very in the moment with what's going on, also enjoy the good times from back in the day. And she's got some great stories to tell. And we had a great time with her.
We really did. So, yeah, listen to the smooth sounds of Dan Hartman underneath us as he takes us into our interview with Joyce Heiser Robinson.
Enjoy. Joyce Heiser, thanks for being on $2 Late Fee.
Oh, well, thank you very much for having me. I'm sorry that we weren't able to do this in person, but be it as it may,
yeah,
here we
times.
Are.
It's one of those things where
these are the times.
I thought, you know what, I'd rather do it. We'll make it work however we are, whether it's a tin can with string or...
there you go.
Smoke signals.
Does anybody remember that, by the way, that actually works?
Yeah.
Absolutely.
That's
I
science.
Don't know if that dates me. Does that date us?
No, I shouldn't.
Okay, good.
No.
If it does, I'm shutting up right now. I don't remember that. What's that? What are you talking about?
No, this is where you say, oh, yeah, I watched it on a YouTube video.
You pull up a tin can app on your phone, and then the other person pulls up a tin can app, and then you connect. Then you text each other. And then.
I was going to tell you, too. I know before we kind of logged on to the computer and everything, you're talking about plumbing. And back in the day, I still actually have the book. It's It's a Don Knotts how to do tile contracting book. And it's a hardcover, and it's got a picture of Don Knotts on the front with like a trowel and cement with a big smile on his face. And
oh my God.
Not joking. It's great. I'm sure Dustin's looking it up right now.
Yeah, seriously. I mean,
well, I was just processing what you were saying. Yeah.
I'm just trying. There's the why of it though. Like that is like Don Knotts and Tylet. Like I don't see the connection.
I don't either. Maybe he that was a pastime of his.
You read the book though, didn't you?
Yeah, I did. I still own it. So, you know, it became one of those things of like, you want to see something really bizarre? Check this out. You know, it wouldn't be an album by like a, you know, wouldn't be John Carradine or something sings Elton John, but something like that. But
yeah, but did you learn anything from it?
Oh no, I already knew all the basic techniques. It was just
you knew all the stuff.
It was kind of like watching,
so it was just like a novelty. It was sort of you didn't need it. You just was like, oh look, this is interesting. Knotts.
I'm super into like kitsch and just, you know, random things. And I thought this would be great when I have somebody over to the house and they're like, oh, coffee table books. Oh, a book about Los Angeles. That's nice. Yeah. Oh, a book about, you know, modern day comic books. Oh, Don Knotts does tile contracting. What's this all about? So.
Don Knotts retiles your bathroom in 20 minutes or less.
But Joyce, you know, off air talking to Dustin on the way over to the recording studio today, I was saying, gee, we're going to probably get into a little bit of what's going on
I'm
now.
Gee whiz, Don.
Golly geez.
Hey there, Barney.
Don Knotts. Don Knotts, chapter 15. Gee whiz, this tile is not fitting in my...
Or gee willikers. It depends on, you know, what part
gee
of the...
Gee willikers.
Yeah, for sure.
Well, Zach, that's just a bunch of malarkey, Zach.
Yeah, we were thinking, you know, okay, if we can have an hour of, like, escapism from the chaos that is going on in the world right now, might not necessarily be a bad thing to just go down nostalgia lane and have some fun and while we're processing all the drama, you know?
Yeah, well, you know, this is an entertainment kind of design or the original design to sort of take you out of the daily stressors of your life and allow you to turn it off for a while and just put it aside and pretend that all these things are not happening for a little while.
It's the darkest time in contemporary history. I was saying, you know, on the flip side of it is like we welcome it in a way to, you know, to talk about it. Certainly, if we all want to just have like a group therapy session amongst ourselves about, you know, it's kind of a different kind of podcast, but it's not, you know, it's not unwelcome.
Well, I was going to say, you and I met about 11 or 12 years ago. Actually,
where did I meet you, Zach?
At Jane's birthday party, and
oh wow, okay, yeah,
and, you know, we don't need to drop names or anything, but you and I met, and it's funny because her mom, I saw you at the party, and so I was talking to her, I was her kindergarten teacher, and I said to her mom that I was a big fan of yours, and she's like, oh, let me go get her and introduce you, you know. And I was like, I'm not that kind of person. I'm like, no, that's okay. You don't need, I'm just making small talk or whatever. And she brings you over with your husband. And she says, yeah, Zach's a really big fan of yours. And you're like, oh yeah, what part? And so I was like, oh shit.
I said that?
Yeah,
or my husband said
no,
it?
No, you said that. You said that.
I said it?
Yeah. And you're like, oh, I'm just messing with you, you know? And, and it was all good, you know? And I was telling you how I ran a summer, an after-school program, like a School of Rock program that was geared towards...
Oh my God, you know what? I actually remember this.
Yep.
Oh my, cool. Yes, I do.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is shocking, by the way. I don't remember anything.
Well, you know, I guess I stood out.
So. That's so... Oh, how funny. Hi.
Yeah, right? And now we're in, we're like, now I know who this freak is, so...
Oh, okay. Yes. Well, yes. So for the audience, Zach and I have a close mutual friend, mm-hmm. and who was, you know, an amazing human being.
Amazing and, mom, too. She's a wonderful mom.
An incredible mother, an incredible yeah. lawyer. Yeah. And so, yeah, okay. Now it's coming back.
At the time, I was teaching and had not really had the foresight to do a podcast with my buddy Dustin. And when we started getting...
Because they didn't exist yet?
Well, yeah. Actually, you're right. They hadn't.
You didn't have foresight to invent the podcast?
Well,
yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. You could have... I don't know. Did any... Whoever... Is there the inventor of the podcast? Like... Who is the inventor of the podcast?
It's actually
I would
Knotts.
Like to know. They,
it's
I think, I was going to say, it is Don Knotts. That's his second book, How to the Make a Podcast with Don Knotts.
yeah, exactly.
Teed that up for me perfectly. Mm-hmm. Now, that might deserve a whop, whop, whop.
Yeah, exactly.
Flash forward many years later, and I'm doing this podcast, and Dustin and I are like, okay, yeah, you know, we want to interview people that we're fans of their work. And talk about their careers, talk about who they are as people. And you were on my list. I'm like, I would love to be able to talk to Joyce about her movies, her career, what you're doing now, your foundation, everything. Because, you know, it's really you had an impact on my life. And I want to thank you for that.
Wow.
Well, sincerely.
Wow. Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Mean, that's really nice. I love hearing that. And, it kind of has amazed me how many times I have heard that, specifically from this movie or from just one of the guys, seems to have been sort of a life-changing, life-affirming moment for a lot of people, and it's. I'm really proud of that, and I'm humbled by it.
Well, Dustin and I just watched the Blu-ray that just came out, and it was kind of perfect timing. I thought, oh, you know, we can talk about the movie.
The 35th anniversary.
How is it? I haven't seen it.
It looks great.
It looks good. Yeah, I did see the restored film. We did a Sherilyn Fenn and I did a. I don't. What is it called? Oh my goodness! I'm so bad at things like
this. No, up in San Francisco, right?
Yeah. So we saw it up on the big screen. Yeah, it was a screening. It was a convention of some kind or a movie festival. It was a movie festival, and I feel really bad that I can't remember the name of it. But anyway, looked incredible. It looked incredible, but I was curious how they kind of really threw this whole thing together really quickly, and it was too bad that we weren't able to get everybody involved.
Yeah, I would have loved to have seen like a little documentary retrospective, but nevertheless, you have the commentary track on there, which is great with the cast, and I just think, it's funny, this was the first time I noticed that you were wearing a wig in the early scenes of the movie.
Oh yeah, yeah. That was not my hair.
Yeah,
they cut it all off before the movie started, and then I had to get I fit for a wig because we had a $5 million budget. You couldn't go back and forth, right?
Nope.
You couldn't. You just had to shoot in locations. Yeah, you couldn't shoot the script. So. You had to shoot by location. So, yeah, so they had to cut off my hair.
And you couldn't pull like a Charlize Theron and do total method acting where you, well, we're going to, I'm going to need year to grow my hair back out.
Yeah. No. That was actually really traumatic. I had my hair chopped off when I think I was in the sixth grade, and I had incredibly long hair, and it was very, very thick. And I think it was just really... My mother just couldn't deal with it anymore. It was just, maybe I was younger, maybe fifth grade. And she couldn't handle it anymore. So she told me that after I went for my physical, that the doctor said I had to cut my hair because it was pulling my neck back.
What?
Oh my God. I'm not kidding. This is what she told me.
as she paid the doctor $20. Yes,
exactly.
Well done, doctor.
That I was going to walk around with my chin up in the air if I didn't cut my hair.
Is he saying you're snooty? So, is that what he's saying?
Yeah, there you go. Hmm. And so they cut off my hair when I was young, in like fifth or sixth grade, and I was so traumatic. And they cut it really short, really just about as short as they did in the movie. Wow. And I swore I would never have short hair again. So yeah, I was re-traumatized.
Did they bring a doctor in?
All for art. Everything for art. Hmm?
I was wondering if they brought a doctor.
The
in,
doctor,
you know,
yeah,
for the,
they
for
brought
the set
him back.
And said, you know, yeah. Terry needs to be forward and.
Yeah, like, yeah, exactly. Right. Got to put that chin down, girl.
Same doctor walks in and he goes, I knew yeah. it. I knew she was going to turn out.
I said, she's in this movie.
I want to dig into just one of the guys in a little bit, but you mentioned when you were a kid. So you're from New York originally, right?
Well, I was born in New York, but I was pretty much raised in Philadelphia.
Oh, cool. Okay.
Yeah, I moved. I was born in the Bronx in Queens. I was born in Manhattan. We lived in Queens. Wow. and then when I was eight years old, we moved to Philadelphia.
Wow. And then you, how long were you in Philly?
So I really think of myself as a Philly girl.
I can see that.
I was in Philadelphia until I was about 18.
And then moved out to L.A.?
And then I moved out to L.A., yes.
How'd you get involved in acting?
Follow the Stars.
Yeah, like was that a passion of yours from the get-go or?
Well, you know, I was a dancer. I was a ballet dancer, and I started having really terrible problems with my knee, and I had to stop. My aunt Nata, who danced with the Bolshoi Ballet before she escaped from Russia during the war, she started teaching me, and she put me on toe shoes.
Wow!
When I was too young. And my ankles hadn't developed. I wasn't strong enough. And so it really messed me up. And it was a really sad story. It was, you know, so it was like my whole childhood. It was like I was a ballerina. I was a ballerina. I was a ballerina. And then all of a sudden, I'm not a ballerina anymore. And it just, I don't know, for me, it just seemed like the logical next step. Well, I'm creative. I need to express myself in some way. This is what I'm going to do. And then I moved out here and then I kind of went back and forth. I went back east and lived in New York for a while too and studied there, studied here. And that's how it all began.
Wow. Wow. From being destroying your feet to coming out to LA. And
yeah, exactly. It was an interesting journey. I got disillusioned with act. Actually, I became disillusioned. If I have to be completely honest, yeah. I became somewhat disillusioned with actors.
Yeah.
And I was, I was really sort of young and, you know, people just seemed, authenticity really mattered to me.
Yeah.
It always has, since I was a child, and I had a really hard time relating to the group of actors that I was involved with, and I went, oh God, this is just, I don't think this, maybe this isn't for me, and I need to do something where I can really make a difference. So I I took a job as a nurse's aide at a hospital for crippled children.
Wow.
And thought I would become a nurse.
Whoa,
that didn't go well.
Because you had a phobia for needles, right?
I have a phobia of blood. I have a phobia of all of those things. Yeah. It was just like, I don't know what I was thinking.
It's funny you say that. My wife has a phobia of blood. And so if you even say blood,
or just saying
cringe.
The word blood.
Yeah. So,
oh yeah.
So, she'll make the sound, she'll go like, "Hurt," right? And so, so my son who's five, like, you know, we'll talk about, I had to go to the doctor earlier in the year for a physical and Kristen, my wife, she goes, "Well, did you get your ha-ha drawn?" And so,
oh my god!
And so from now on,
wow,
like,
it's that bad.
Yeah. And so if blood gets brought up in the house, Bodhi will be like, "Mommy, is that ha-ha?"
Oh my goodness!
So anyways, it's a real deal. It's a thing.
It's a thing. It's definitely a thing. But I thought maybe this would be the thing that would help me get over that thing.
Yeah,
well,
of
that,
course. Yeah.
That did it. And then I was just like, oh yeah, forget this. You know, I'm going to go out there and just be like an inauthentic actor. No.
That's going to be phony, just like everybody else.
That's funny.
I'm going back out there. Yeah. I'm just going to, yeah. Mm-hmm.
So was this in between, because your first movie was Hollywood Nights, right?
Well, no, actually, the first film, I did two films prior, the student, like AFI films.
Okay, okay.
Yes, I did two AFI films, and then I did Hollywood Nights.
I love Hollywood Nights, personally.
I was just curious when you were talking about inauthenticity, like speaking to the fact that we loving the process of acting, but then all the other things that kind of come with the business of acting is so icky. Yeah. And I imagine during that time, like the schmoozing and like having to be at certain places, is that sort of what you were speaking about? And then, you know, just the auditioning process with everybody else.
Yeah.
Being
inauthentic. Yeah, all of that. I mean, it was, you know, when I was younger, when I first got into the business and I first started working, I was very there. I still had that, an innocence, and that everything was just new and fabulous and I loved being on a set, and I loved working with actors, and I loved working with directors, and everything was fabulous, right? Everything was great. The auditioning process was really easy. I mean, in the beginning, it was like, oh, you know, you come in and you talk and you read a little bit, and they're like, okay, and then they call you and they give you the job, or they hire you in the room, or... and Hollywood Nights was actually one of those, I actually got hired in the room.
Oh, wow.
Nice.
Which was really cool. And Floyd was great. And I got to work with Roberta Wallach, and you know, I was like a crazy fan of her father's and her mother's.
Nice.
So, you know, in the beginning, it was really great. I was really young. It was really great. I was naive. And then it just, yeah. I love acting. I love being on a set. And I actually love being in front of the camera, acting. Not, interestingly enough, I'm not taking pictures. I'm not good. I don't like that. but acting, being... you know, throwing myself into a role, being somebody else, I really enjoy it. But yes, the business of acting is actually really icky.
Yeah.
Or at least it was. It ended up being that way for me. And just the whole process. And it's why I left. It's why I left.
And occasionally you would pop back up in certain things, and then, and then you would, was that because you're like, okay, this project sounds interesting to me. It's been a while. I've taken enough of a break. I want to try it again. Or was it, can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, it usually came about because someone just offered me the role. The audition, there are some actors, God bless them, that just love auditioning. They love it. Mm-hmm. And
who are they?
Never,
because I really want to know.
I know. I've heard
Don Knotts loves auditioning.
Don Knotts.
Yeah. Don Knotts, of course. Of course Don Knotts loved it.
Yeah.
I just didn't. And I had a lot of anxiety around it. And I remember an actor friend of mine who told me that, and what was so crazy too, is I was not good. I was just not good at auditioning. Like, I was great in my room or with a partner helping me. I was freaking brilliant. And then I would get into a room with people, you know, that were just sitting there and with their arms crossed and a casting director reading by rote. And I wasn't good. I really wasn't good. And a lot of it had to do with nerves. And I would get that sort of rapid heartbeat. And the idea of being sort of put in front of the judge, right? It's the judge and jury. Yeah. Yeah. And whether I was going to be able to pay there was just always so much to that I would carry into the room with me. You know, if I don't get this job, I'm not going to be able to pay my rent. I'm not going to be able to pay for my car or my insurance or, you know, whatever it was. Yep. And I was never able to leave that outside the door. And yet I never carried it on a set when I worked. But when I walked into those rooms, it just took over. It took over, and I was shitty, if I can say that on your podcast.
Oh, yeah, you can swear all you want.
Of course.
It's definitely
a good. All right.
It's not PG, even at in the morning. But many people know this story.
It's a different animal. Sorry to interrupt, but it's totally different animal.
It's totally different animal. I was a career teacher for 15 years and then got into voice acting. And it's not the same as screen acting, but there's a level of anxiety that I had not anticipated. And insecurity and that feeling of like, you know, suddenly the audition process being so overwhelming and having to really train my mind differently because I was going to a consistent job every day, you know, and then suddenly everything changed for me. So on one level, I can, you know, relate to that feeling of like, oh, no, this is not fun, you know. And stepping away from this process for you obviously was the healthy choice to make, right?
Oh, for sure. I will leave names out, but I got a phone call from a huge show, a big show, giant show, bigly show, and they really, they were like, oh, you know, we've wanted you for forever. We've wanted you for a really long time. And, you know, will you come in? And, you know, because there's some people that, you know, really don't know your work and they would just really appreciate if you'd come in and read. And I was like, okay. So I accepted the audition and I mean, it was like 4:30 or 5 o'clock in Simi Valley. And I don't know. And I live in the west side of Los Angeles. So if you LA, know that alone is a nightmare.
12 miles is 3 hours.
Yeah.
That
could be a deal breaker like, right there. Yeah.
Total deal breaker. And by the way, before podcasts. With podcasts, I'm not as bad about traffic as I used to be. So it was just the getting there part that was really, really stressful. And then I get there and no joke, I sat and waited for an hour. And I was just sitting there and I just kept thinking, oh my God, it's so disrespectful.
Yeah.
They are so disrespectful of actors' time. It is, And so I, you know, and I got myself worked up and I thought, I just should leave. I really need to leave. And, but I just was like, no, this is a great role. You really want to be in this show. And I stuck it out. And then I walked into a room and it was like literally an airport hangar or an airplane, not an airport, an airplane hangar. And there was a long table and I don't know, there must've been 15 to 20 people standing behind, you know, or sitting at this table. And there was one single chair, like, all the way across the room. Wow. And I walked in, and they didn't say a word to me. And they called me.
Wow.
They called me because they, you know, and I'm like, they didn't say one word. And it just was, the whole thing was so awful. And I walked out. I went to my car and I burst into tears. Mm. And I called my agent and I just said, you know what? I can't do this anymore. This is like killing my soul.
Mm. Yeah.
I just can't. And weirdly enough, a friend of mine directed one of those shows and I actually ended up doing a little cameo role in it.
Oh,
but,
nice.
Yeah.
Like, I'll do the cameo. But
many years later, but she, you know, she was a woman director that I'd worked with before. So anyway,
and that show was Hill Street Blues. I'm kidding.
No.
But
no.
I mean,
Seinfeld.
Sounds. It sounds. You know, God. In one moment, I'm like picturing like Franz Kafka's The Trial back in the day of like this long, you know, table and you're just sitting there and you know, it sounds so intimidating and
that's
horrible.
A great visual actually. Yeah.
Oh man. I mean, yeah, look, you know, we can go on and on about so many of the movies that you were in that we loved, or love. But there's this process that people may or may not understand that behind the scenes, it is a pain in the ass and it can, like you said, soul crushing and it's not, you know, the end result can be fun, but the leading up part is so stressful and so agonizing. And I mean, how about like the fact that you survived through all of it? That's a beautiful thing.
Well, yeah. I mean, it's interesting because, you know, for somebody, you know, I'm a pretty tough girl. You know, I've battled my way through life and. But I will say that, you know, this business kind of kicked my ass. Mm. And it was, you know, living, and certainly in my case, I mean, there are people that obviously who become big movie stars in this, but it's just, you know, you're living with rejection literally every day of your life. There's always, it's like always that you're too something or you're not enough of something. So you're too much of this, not enough of this. And it's tough. It's really tough.
It's like 100 job interviews a week or something, you know, like if you, I mean, not
yeah,
you
exactly,
but yeah. You're always on an interview and you're always being like, yeah, no,
I always said,
if you even hear
you're
anything
always,
at all.
You're going into the same rooms and you're sitting there waiting with the same people that you're,
same,
you know,
people. It's just, every day there's that person. Yep.
Yeah. It's just, it's, it is, the glamour of Hollywood.
Well, I always equated it to dating. And you know, you go on a date with someone and you're like, oh, this went really well. Right. And you know, and then you never hear from that person ever again.
Yeah.
And you're like, wait,
yeah, right.
What happened? I thought we had the same interest in music. When, you know?
Oh yeah.
But that person
never says anything to you.
Yes.
On the table.
Yeah. You get ghosted. Ghosted. Yeah.
Well, I've been on a few dates like that back in the day, but I on one hand, I look at the movies that you did that I love, like Hollywood Nights was so much fun, and for me, back in the day, my brother and I used to sing, you know, Lawrence of Arabia, came to fight the Turkish. But you and And you had like a slew of the fact that you were in Valley Girl and then staying alive. We had Vince DiCola on our program a little while back, and he did the, you know, was part of Far From Over and some of the music for Staying Alive. And he, and Dustin was like, well, we're not going to talk about the movie. We're going to talk about the music because the music is what we love about it. But I personally love Staying Alive from like a cheese ball kind of perspective. And even though Tony Manero is kind of a, you know, he's not a good guy and he has to come around, but you know, I enjoyed that movie nevertheless.
Yeah, it's a, listen, I mean, it was a fun movie. I like the original.
Yes.
Better than the one that I was in, but it was, you know, John was great. He was great to work with. He was like a really, really sweet, really nice. And, you know, I was one of, I think I did that right after Hollywood Nights, I think, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
A couple of years
ago. I need to ask you, this is like my timeline is so like, I don't, I really should have a cheat sheet when I do these things. Like, wait, no, when did I do that? Who did I do that with? What? It's just,
it's all good. Like, cause I,
Zach has a graph printed out of all of your allergies, yeah. And aversion to needles and then Staying Alive and 83.
I wish you'd shared that with me before we started.
It was a PowerPoint presentation, but it's on DOS. Yeah. So yeah. It's not like,
yeah.
I don't even know what that means. I'm just making it, pulling it out of my ass. But yeah, no, you did that prior. You did
DOS?
That after.
Yeah.
And Valley Girl was before Staying Alive. As far as like when they were released, you know.
When they were released. Yes. We, yeah.
Right,
we
okay. Actually, yeah. 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 Right. When, yeah. Yeah. Well, usually most of the ones that I did were released pretty soon thereafter shooting, but and some of them never. But but interestingly enough, tying it back to the story that I told before, is that the Martha Coolidge, who directed Valley Girl,
yeah,
and put me in Valley Girl, is also the director.
She's the one for the show.
The show, yes, exactly.
I love that.
She was the one. She was the one for the show.
She gave you the cameo. I love that.
Yeah, pretty
well,
funny.
Well, she did a screening of Valley Girl at the Arrow in Santa Monica years ago. That and Real Genius, and she talked about how groundbreaking Valley Girl was on many levels. But mm-hmm. I just love, like, and then I looked at the fact that Just One of the Guys, you know, is directed also, you know, not by Martha Coolidge. But, you know, has,
right.
But obviously, but also as a female director at a time when that was not, it was not commonplace, right?
No, it wasn't. But there were a number of female directors that in the 80s, and interestingly enough, who all did great work. I mean, Martha being one of them. Martha was an amazing director. Incredibly talented.
Yeah.
Should have had a way bigger career.
Agreed.
Amy Heckerling.
Yeah.
And Lisa Gottlieb,
yeah,
who
Lisa
did
Gottlieb.
Just One of the Guys. I
yep.
mean, Lisa is so talented, and her sense of comedic timing, the cast that she put together. I mean, she was a treasure.
Phenomenal.
I mean, she really is a treasure, and it's just, you know, it's just kind of odd how so many of us that had that kind of success in the 80s, it just didn't carry through.
I do, and I'm sure you do too,
agree.
But I appreciate the fact that here we are 35 years later and we're still talking about Just One of the Guys. And because mm-hmm. we my wife had never seen it, actually, and then Dustin and I and his wife, Erin, we all sat down. Well, we Zoomed watched it, which is a whole different experience. But
oh, okay.
You know, where we all sync up at the same time kind of thing. But we were commenting on the fact
what
that...
What frame are you on? What frame are you...
yeah. Okay. Right. I hear an echo.
Okay. Wait. There's right. a delay. Wait. Do you... The coach is echoing. Wait. No. Okay.
But here we are. Like, oh, and there... And I was going to point out the fact you were talking about your timelines are a little fuzzy. There's a moment in the movie... when, because it's set in 1985, but I forget the specific line, but Clayton Rohner talks about like 1987. And I don't, I think it might've
Oh, he's asking out, you know what he is? He's
yes.
Terry has like kids convincing him to ask out the girl in the science lab or maybe, no, it's by the bikes or whatever, yes. But yeah. He's just like, you know, are you busy? And she's like, yep. You free
sometime
Saturday?
Yeah.
And she says, you know, are you free anytime in 1987 or something like that? Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, but it was an 85 movie and we were like, oh.
And I'm like, wait a minute, what's just going on here?
Right. Well, that makes sense though.
It does. No, so totally makes sense.
In the future, are you free anytime
in the future?
Next year?
Yes, yeah. Exactly. So
or 2 years
can
from
you
now.
Check your book for a couple of years from now just to see if you can pencil me in?
Probably busy. Probably.
Yeah.
Busy.
Yeah,
but you're right that cast is phenomenal, and there's so many layers. Like watching it now as an adult versus when I was, you know, however old back in the day, and understanding it on a different level was so cool because mm-hmm. I'm like, wait, there is so much more complexity to these characters. Case in point, Sandy, Sherilyn Fenn's character. Like,
we explained that we're talking about just one of the guys, by the way? I just like to keep us on track because I realize we segue, we go all over the place, but we are talking about the movie.
The movie.
Sorry. I have to say, too, that Dustin and I are more to the point myself. I tend to deviate from topics and then always come back to it in some roundabout way. So,
well, it's more that you come back, but we don't know we're back yet. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So you're like, all right. And so anyway, speaking about the war, and you're like, oh, wait, but you're talking about the movie? Like, I'm talking about which movie?
You should have seen me as a teacher with my kids. Like, ADD on that.
You were like, Martha Coolidge.
How do we follow you?
Mr. Schaefer, what's going on right now?
Are we doing math or reading?
But I was going to say that you're Sandy, Sherilyn Fenn's character, I had like so much more kind of sympathy for her character watching it now versus back in the day. I'm thinking, she's just interested in Terry. She just wants to go out on a date with him, you know, like, I don't know.
Yeah, she has a crush.
Yeah.
She has a crush and, you know, and she's just so incredibly sweet in this movie. And she kind of gets her heart crushed.
Yeah, totally.
And she's a powerhouse. She's such a, and I hadn't seen her, by the way, when we Sketcherfest. Ah, there you go.
Nice.
Sketchfest.
Okay. Okay, not in
San Francisco.
Look, eventually, it comes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Not based
that's
on the shoes.
No, Skechers. Nope.
Everyone got a free pair of Skechers and a signed pair.
Threw them in the trash. Yeah.
Sketchfest. It was great, though. We hadn't seen each other since the film and since we made the movie. And, I mean, she went on to have a really nice career, but... Yeah. Again, still should have been, you know, I mean, Sherilyn should have been huge. She was so gorgeous and talented and is gorgeous and talented, not was. Where was I? Oh, so yes, and her character is just, you know, is just so sweet. And what I loved that Lisa did is that, you know, she sort of allowed us all to, and then worked with us to create our characters, to give them, like you said, layers. The film had so many of them, as you say, you kind of realize it later. A lot of people, it didn't come to that right away. I mean, you know, it sort of went out there, was pushed, and it's like as a crazy teenage romp, right? But there's so much more than the sum of its parts, right? It's just, it is very, it does have a gravitas to it.
Well, I mean, even speaking to what you're saying, it's like the film itself didn't even, it was kind of buried at the time with all the other Brat Pack movies and really like came alive on video and HBO.
On video.
Yeah.
You know, although speaking of did, those, you know, layers.
Well, it's crazy because when we, our film, which was made for, I think, a little under $5 million with nobody in it, no names. We were released the same weekend as Perfect, and the studio put every single solitary dollar, marketing dollar, into Perfect. Right. And they just threw us out there. Yeah. They just like stuck, they threw us out there in tons of theaters. And we actually did better in our opening weekend than Perfect did. So Perfect was a complete failure.
Well, because it wasn't perfect.
And because it wasn't perfect, yes.
Sorry. Cue the sound
and
effect.
And we went on, and I mean, this was years ago, so I don't really know where what it's at now. But I mean, we made about our movie made about $90 million.
That's pretty ridiculous. How that's a lot.
It's unbelievable.
It's incredible.
It's unbelievable. Actually,
yeah, and it's
so.
And when you say a bunch of, you know, it's funny because at the time, relatively unknown actors, I think maybe Billy Zabka was the one of the more well-known because of Karate Kid. But man, like that cast. And so on Instagram this week on our $2 Instagram page, I've kind of been profiling a lot of the actors in the movie and talking about some of the things we liked about them.
Yeah.
And I forgot, you can't do that with many movies. There's not a lot of movies where you go, okay, I really like the lead actor and the supporting actor were cool, you know, but you're, I'm going down the list of going, yeah, no, that standout performance,
yep.
Like Clayton Rohner, mm-hmm. who yep. like I've had a man crush on since I think I first saw him on screen. And I was like, I wanted to be him so bad back in the day. Cause I just thought he like looked cool, you know? And then, you know, from like Deborah Goodrich and, you know, and, and, you know, and Tony Hudson and like everybody,
Tony Hudson,
just like everybody,
Billy Jacoby.
Yeah. Like everybody played their part so well and so likable, like your character in so many ways. I thought, you know, I always thought, oh, Terry was such like, she was just out there wanting to, you know, for justice and wanting to be, you know, seen. And then, but then watching it now, I'm like, well, you kind of have like this arrogance about you and you had to kind of come down off your high horse a little bit. And that's the way I viewed it anyway.
Like school lunches, man. Everybody wants to hear about that, to read about it.
Yeah, exactly. I discovered myself in that movie, right? I mean, my character discovers herself in that movie. She starts out in one place and she, you know, and she goes through a real transition.
Yeah.
She is, you know, about, you know, wearing cute clothes and, you know, driving a cool car and having a hot boyfriend and, you know, and sort of thinks that, you know, maybe that this is something that she would like, you know, like, I think it was always kind of like, this is a girl who imagines that she can just decide that she's going to be something and she'll be it.
Yeah.
Yep.
Right?
Yep.
There's nothing in between. There's no, you know, things are sort have been sort of handed to her. She comes from, you know, a world of privilege. And, you know, there is a shallowness. And she... throughout the course of this movie, she becomes a smarter, bigger, deeper human being, and you know, conscious and compassionate, and you know, I mean, she really goes through a transition.
Be nice to hope that that could be said for other people who are very full of themselves and wish they could go through a transition and become a better person on the outcome, but it's not always the case.
Yeah, so not always the case, yes.
Yeah, you require a humanity and empathy for that.
Yeah,
probably.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, you,
it's got to be in there.
It's nice to know that we have your film to escape in and go, okay, well, this is a reality that we hope could be, this is a fictional place that we wish could be a reality in some ways, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
Joyce, I was wondering how much of this film was improvised?
Very little, actually. A little. I mean, there were little things here and there. Something else unheard of for a movie of with this kind of a budget is we actually had 2 weeks of rehearsal.
Oh wow!
And in some of in our locations, or some of our locations,
wow.
and that's kind of unheard of. So we worked out a lot of stuff, and we're kind of writing and rewriting. Lisa did a lot of the rewriting. Jeff Franklin did some great work and some hilarious jokes. I mean, the stuff with Buddy is just, you know, it's pure gold.
Oh, yeah.
But, yeah. So
Mom
by
says
the time
hi.
That, yeah. Yeah, oh, my God.
Yeah, I'll get it. Hello? Hey, yo, scumbag. Hey, suck your own. Eat me. He's same to you, butt face. Mom says hi.
Most of it is scripted. Most of it is scripted, and a lot of it is things
gotcha.
That were changed, you know, in rehearsals.
Yeah.
And things that just didn't work, but very little of it is improvised.
Well, the writing gotcha. is so damn good. It's so damn good. Like
so good.
So
yeah.
many lines where.
So quotable.
Yeah. Yeah. Dustin and I were going back and forth, and my wife is like, how many times have you seen this movie? I'm like, well.
You know, it kind of, I will tell you that when I was watching the movie on the big screen, at first I wasn't going to watch. I was like, oh, you know, I've seen this movie a lot. My nephew came to visit. I was going to go out and have lunch, and then he'd never seen the film on a big screen. So he's like, "Oh, come on, Aunt Joyce, let's stay and watch it." And so I did. And I have to tell you, I was actually a little bit in tears. I have to admit,
oh, really?
At the end,
yeah,
I really was.
Yes.
I was so moved by it, and so like, wow, I cannot believe. I mean, yes, the music, yes, the clothes, but I mean, that movie really stands up. You
yeah.
know,
yeah.
like 35 years later, that movie stands up. I had a few squirmy moments like that. I just didn't like myself. But other than that, it's just like, oh, wow, this is so good. This is so funny. This is so poignant and
yeah.
sweet. And wow, we don't see yeah. this a lot anymore.
No, your prom scene where you and Rick are dancing with each other. That made bring so much joy to my life to this day, because first of all, the song, and Dustin and I have talked a lot about this, that song Hard Way that band is playing.
Yeah.
Right. So what's what's funny about that is my son. So I sing a lot of these songs in the house all the time, and I play them all the time, and pretty much our playlist is like 70s and 80s music. And so that song comes on and he'll sing it with me, like the chorus, you know, and he has no idea what he's singing, and he'll sometimes like mumble the lyrics, but it's really sweet.
That's so cute.
And he has this knack of me where I'll whistle part of the song and he'll know like the chorus or the hook.
Wow.
And so
that's great.
He's like, well, what's that song from? And I'll tell him the movie, and you know, he's obviously not old enough yet to watch it, but I'll talk to him or I'll show him pictures. And I showed him the dance scene in that. And he was smiling along with me because he's probably like, oh, well, this makes my dad happy. So it makes me happy, you know, and because he's such a sweetheart. But that song I had tried to track down for decades. Like, I have to find this song, right? And the version of it that's on the album is not the same as what it is in the movie. The tempo, the pitch is different.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, if you listen to them side by side, they sound different. And so for years, I was like, no, I have to have that version. And I recorded it off the TV back in the day. And I ended up not going to my prom because I was like not into high school and just it was just not
because you were looking for that version. Like you were just so busy. I can't go to the prom.
Well, kind of
envision my prom to be
kind of like with how you summed up acting. I was like, no, this is not the real thing. This is not what I signed on for. So I'm like, I'm not going to prom.
The song or the prom? The prom.
The prom.
Right. Inauthentic
prom. The prom.
This is not what... Yeah.
Well, I didn't even have a prom, so...
Oh, there you go. So, okay. That says something.
Yeah.
That scene, I love that scene so much. It looked like you guys were having such a great time in that scene. I don't know.
Well, I don't know if you... Did we talk about this? I don't remember what we talked about in the commentary, but you know, James Brown literally came to the set and taught us how to dance.
That's crazy.
That's how he dances. It was crazy. And again, I mean, having been a huge James Brown fan, it was just like, wow, this is like, you like pinch yourself, you know? God bless him. It was very difficult to understand anything he said. But boy, he could still move. I mean, he couldn't really talk well, but he still could move. We had so much fun. We had a blast. I'm telling you, it was such a joyful set.
That's great.
And
that's great to hear.
It was just joyful. And we just, I mean, much to the chagrin of our first AD, Bill Scott, who was truly one of the greats. Because, I mean, we would just break out in fits of giggles and would not be able to stop. And, I mean, we could sometimes hold up a shot for, you know, 15, 20 minutes because we couldn't stop laughing.
That's hilarious.
And I mean, it was pretty... definitely had a few of those.
You're not making a Werner Herzog movie. You're not in the jungle and, you know.
No, we weren't. Definitely not.
It's all good.
It was all good. Yeah.
you did. So I was thinking about this because I in kind of doing research for some of your background, I pulled up the Dan Hartman video, I Could Dream About You. Yeah.
It's amazing.
You know, somebody actually just posted that. I guess somewhere in Florida over Memorial Day weekend, there was like a huge screen out in the middle of a park, and that video was playing.
Oh, really?
And they
took
a video.
I Can Dream About You.
Well, it's one of the greatest songs.
It really is.
It gets caught in your head all day.
Song. It's a great song, and he was, God rest his soul, he was a really, really great guy.
Yeah.
Lovely, like, lovely person.
I hadn't realized that, first of all, we didn't have what we have now, technology-wise, to to see all of these things back in the day. So I didn't know that there was a music video for that song for Streets of Fire, and it's a personal favorite of mine. And then the fact that you're in the video, and it's so much fun in that 80s nostalgic way with the neon and the hair. And I love all that
the
stuff.
Hair.
Yeah.
The hair. Oh, my God. The hair. That hair. Every time I see it, I just was like, oh, my God, look at that.
What are you talking about? It's fantastic. It's fabulous.
It's amazing. It's amazing. And when he stands on the bar to impress you, it's wonderful. To dance.
By the way,
James Brown was not choreographed that video.
No, he definitely didn't choreograph that. I shot that in London at the Hard Rock Cafe.
Oh,
in
London.
Yeah, they flew me. I mean, it was awesome. Yeah, flew me to London.
It's so cool.
And yeah.
Wow.
Got to stay there for a little bit. Yeah, it was really fun.
Yeah, and it's so funny.
Did you have to audition for that? I'm sorry.
No. No.
Right, okay.
I did not have to audition for it.
Come in the room, you go in a giant room and with 15 money people and just, walk around.
Walk up to a jukebox, pretend you're putting in the money.
I don't know,
to Simi Valley for this.
Yeah. You didn't put the quarter in the jukebox right. There's something about your But you, so obviously, you went from acting to your foundation work. Can we talk a little bit about what you've been doing for the better part of the past several years, right?
Yeah, yeah.
The Harold Robinson Foundation?
The Harold Robinson Foundation. We have, we started our 501c3 11 years ago. And we started out really with a simple idea that we just wanted to send as many kids to camp as possible, kids who would not, ordinarily get the opportunity to go to camp, which is something that camp, by the way, is really where I discovered that I had a talent so that when I did make that transition from dancing to acting, I mean, it was rooted in my camp experience. So I was a drama camper. I was, and I did the shows at camp, and my childhood, I grew up with a single mom, three younger brothers. She worked three jobs, so I would go to school. I would go to dance. I would cook dinner. I would do my homework. I mean, I was like every single second of my life when I was a child was scheduled.
Yeah.
So going to camp was such a, it was where I was able to get away and just really be a kid and not have to think about anything else. And so it was always something that, I knew the impact that it had on me. And my husband owns a camp. So it was awesome. And when he bought the camp, it was always with the idea that at some point when he could afford it, he wanted to open it up to kids from, under-resourced communities don't have the opportunity to go to camp. And so that's how we started. And we began with just scholarshiping kids to summer camp. And then 11 years ago, we started the Harold Robinson Foundation Camp Ubuntu, and where we focus on basically the transition from middle school to high school, which is a very, very sort of, it's a really harrowing time for kids. And it's very difficult to navigate no matter where you are in the socioeconomic ladder. And it is especially difficult for kids in the communities that we're working in, specifically in Watts. Mm. And it's the first time they leave sort of the safety and security of their little elementary schools and they go to this big school that has four separate entrances to the four housing developments that have been at war with each other for the past, I don't know, 45 years now.
Yeah.
So you have kids that are getting jumped into gangs in sixth grade. And so we take them sort of out of the neighborhood and up to this beautiful place, this beautiful camp in the mountains where we do camp retreats, and everything is geared toward, I mean, it's really kind of social emotional learning, and all of the activities are really metaphors. They're fun and they're great, but they're, like the ropes course and the climbing walls and things like that are just, it's about how you need to ask for help, how, that you're going to come, you're going to come up against all these obstacles in your life, and how do you navigate your way through. And then we, we do music and art and then once we do these retreats, we then started in this middle school in Watts, we started a summer day camp.
Oh, that's great.
Yes. So it's kind of like we say, we plant the seed at the overnight camp, and then we continue to water it. And it's just been it's incredibly wonderful. And it's just been really impactful. And I'm super, super proud of it. It's the best thing I've ever done in my life. And it's really kind of all I want to do.
It's awesome.
And yeah, I do. I love it. And we, now with this, the pandemic, we've had to take a really hard pivot.
Yeah.
Because, camp is anti-social distancing. There's everything that we do, is about, giving someone a hand up, helping them, it's just you're sleeping in cabins, you're eating together, you're doing all this. So we had to make a hard, hard pivot. And I'm really, again, incredibly proud of the team that I work with. And we were able to work with some of our partners. We're in the process of delivering 110,000 pounds of food. Fresh fruit and vegetables. I mean, 22. Every family is getting a 22-pound box of fresh produce.
That's great.
We've done that. We partnered with Dole, and Dole has delivered about. We had a huge 18-wheeler of 22 pallets of snack food and. Awesome. And, we're just working together with community partners, and it's kind of like our COVID emergency, relief plan. And now we launch on June 8th, I think we're launching virtual camp, and we're going to be delivering to all the kids who register. They're going to get camp in a box. And we're going to give them all the supplies that they need for virtual camp. And they're going to be able to come on in Zoom rooms with their counselors. And we're going to have fire. We're going to have, campfire and a lot of the activities that we do at camp. And we're going to have a bunch of guest hosts coming in. And so I'm really excited about that. So that's Camp Ubuntu Watts 2.0. And then with June 1st, we're launching. I don't know if we had a huge fundraiser, which would bring in, I mean, this is crazy. And this one fundraiser would bring in about $1 million a year.
Wow.
And it was called Pedal on the Pier, and it was on the Santa Monica Pier. And we would have about 11 to 1500 people out on the Santa Monica Pier, on spin bikes and dancing and eating, and it was peer-to-peer fundraising, and it was super, super successful. And well, guess what? So our entire budget, we had to cancel. So on June 1st, we're launching what's called Ubuntu in Motion. It's a Pedal on the Pier event, and we're going to be encouraging people. It's a 7-day challenge. You'll come up with whatever the physical challenge is, whether it be walking, running, dancing, swimming, kayaking, and that you're going to do for 7 days while raising money to help our COVID emergency relief fund.
Is there a website for that?
The website is, it's haroldrobinsonfoundation.org. And, or you could go to PEDAL, P-E-D-A-L, on, O-N, the, T-H-E, peer, P, how do you, P-I-E-R,
yep.
dot com. I know, I was like, I'm trying, I write in the air.
It's okay.
And the Pedal on the Pier website is now will now be the website. So what's really cool about this, even though our event is so amazing and Pedal on the Pier is just an incredible thing, but what I love about this, you know, pivot that we've been forced to do is that now people all over the country, all over the world will be able to be involved in this if
That's
they want
to,
you know. Yeah, and it's just about like getting out. You've all been cooped up in the house for a really long time. Let's do something, you know, challenge yourself to get out there every day and have fun and post about it. And it'll start on Father's Day, June 21st,
okay.
And it goes to June 27th. And then for all registered participants, there's going to be an after party on the 27th, and it's going to be very cool. And it's going to be comedians, live music, special guests.
It's
going to be cool.
We will be. We'll put all the links on our website. We'll put all the. We'll advertise on our Instagram and the Facebook and all that stuff.
I would be so appreciative. I'll send you all the information.
Cool.
And so that you have our flyers and stuff. And yeah, we need all the help we can get. It's a scary time. I mean, it's a scary time for everyone, but for our kids that are already, I mean, my goodness, it's just, you know, half of them don't even have. You know, that's one of the things that we're also working on, by the way, is we're trying to make sure that we get Wi-Fi. We're working with one of our board members, trying to get Wi-Fi where some kids don't have it. A lot of people are coming together to help, and it's really been a beautiful thing. And we've got to make sure that we take care of these communities because, as you know, Ubuntu, which is our camps are named, Camp Ubuntu, which is the South African philosophy, which basically translates out to I am because we are. And it's just like we rise and we rise as a community and we fall as a community. And it's just like we can't, if we can't lift up our neighbors, then, you know, we will end up suffering as a result of that. So
I
really encourage people to get involved and help us out. And hopefully one of these days we'll be able to go national and we'll be able to have these programs in every city in the country. So that's our goal.
Yeah, from your words, from your mouth to
To God's ears.
Once everyone hears hears this podcast, you will go.
There you go. There you go.
It's that easy, Joyce.
Well,
why do you think I'm here, Dustin?
You know, we've had a few guests on in the past, and they said this is the number one 80s podcast, right? And we're like, oh yeah, yeah. In our minds, you know. So, you know, you just reminded me. Really,
no, it is.
It's a really. On total deviation back to just one of the guys before I forget. We had Matt Adler on our show. Matt Adler was in the movie North Shore and Teen Wolf, and he talked extensively about how he wanted so badly to play your brother Buddy in Just One of the Guys, and ended up getting Teen Wolf instead. But he wanted that role so badly. So
he was like, "That's the role. That's the role in
Hollywood. It is.
That's."
Yeah. It is the right. I mean, come on. I'm sorry, but Billy Jacoby stole every single solitary scene.
Totally he
was in. I mean, he was just, you know, we would joke about it, but he's so damn funny.
This morning I knew her. I talked to her. She screamed at me. Everything was great. Now she's wearing my clothes. And who do you think you are, Tootsie?
No.
Okay, Yentl, what do you want to be, a rabbi?
Just tell me what's wrong.
Really? Okay. Well, Look how you're standing. I mean, drop your hands. Okay, now stick your hip in. All right, now move your feet apart. Okay, guys take up space. All right, now you gotta look tougher. Very crucial, something every guy does. Let me see you scratch your balls. Hey, come on, try it. Wait a minute. Watch the master. Now, first, there's your basic shift. But that's not always enough. Sometimes you gotta get inside, dig a little, let some air in, move things around.
Yeah, well, maybe my balls don't itch.
All balls itch, it's a fact.
Well, maybe this would help. Not bad.
Shit. Maybe I should try that. Okay. Let's see you walk. Hold it. Look. You got balls now. Use them.
Say, baby, what's happening?
I'm a lean, mean sex machine. And that be the way
say,
it
baby,
is.
Say, baby, what's happening? I'm a lean, mean sex machine. And that be the way it is.
I think you'll pass as long as you don't move.
I'm gonna do it. I'm gonna take that article to Sturgis Waller and I'm gonna submit it as a guy.
It makes perfect sense. Got a problem? You're getting dragged.
You don't think I can do it, do you?
No way. But I'd love to see you try.
Absolutely perfect in his delivery. And again, I mean, I've got to go back to the you know, Tony and Deborah and Clayton and Ari. I mean, just it's yeah. So every little one, you know, they all just shine. They were all just so sweet and so they're all so talented. And I just, you know, I was so lucky to be surrounded by so many talented people. It was a gift.
I mean, I didn't mean to deviate from obviously your beautiful foundation, but I just had to throw that out there. And I do want to say back in regards to the foundation, and you're talking about kids and that social connection and how important that is. And being a former educator myself and understanding the importance of social emotional learning at that age and how vital and how we need that more so now than we ever maybe have because of all the negative bullshit in the world. It's creating a lot of challenges, but I love hearing that you guys are working on those challenges and finding ways to get around it and invent some new technology or something that is going to continue to build upon the foundation that you've created already.
Yeah. I mean, again, when you talk about having to, you know, like you have to reinvent, right?
Yeah.
You get thrown, you reinvent or die, right? That's, you know, that was what we're faced with. So either this is over for us for now. And who knows if we could have come back from it, we have to figure this out. Because this is also a community that depends on us now. They've told us from the beginning, so many people come in here and they make so many promises and, you know, and then they leave. And, you know, but we haven't done that. We haven't left. We have stayed. We have been there. And we are not going to leave. And we are not going to give up on them. And we're, look, I'm making myself cry. We love, you know, we love this. We love our community. And there's, I mean, they're just amazing, incredible people. And they just need opportunity. That's all, you know, that's the difference. It's their only difference between them and us is opportunity.
Yeah, you're right.
Opportunity.
You're absolutely right.
Yep. I'm getting off my soapbox. I'm making myself cry.
you had mentioned you were on a you were on another podcast not that long ago, and you had one, and you said, you know, they never talked about the fact that about my fighting, and I like to fight, but here I hear this is like a, you'll appreciate the segue. You're talking about fighting for these kids and fighting for this cause and keeping it alive. But you know, you are a fighter, like in so many ways, and you, I just. Dustin and I, as we were kind of prepping for this,
I'm giving this segue a B-, by the way. So
oh,
far.
Come on. it's rough. I understand. Come on, cut me some slack.
Think you're doing a good
continue.
Job.
Oh, thanks.
Continue.
Thanks. Thank you. You're I need welcome. My gold star for the day. Just the fact that, you know, you made that transition to what you're doing now, and you love what you're doing. You found your passion. You found the thing in your life that makes you get up every morning and want to be, as you know, a better person or whatever. I'm just so happy that you're doing this, because on a personal note, you know, just being the teacher and being a father of a kid and wanting to put every single thing I can into my son to make sure, you know, he is the best person he can absolutely be. You know, emotionally, I've told him a million times, I'm like, I don't care if you're how well you can read and write and do math. But if you're a good person, you have empathy and you love and you show that love to people and you show how caring you are. That's more important than all the other shit, you know, and I don't say shit, but whatever. You know, and so I'm glad you're doing that. You know,
I have to honestly, for me, especially now, you have to challenge. I mean, there's a lot that's going on in the world right now that is, you know, it makes me very, very angry. And
say more.
I am experiencing feelings of, you know, of rage that, I mean, I never even knew I had. And it's just like, I know I've got to, and we all do, we need to channel this energy. And, you know, not to sound hippy dippy, but it's just like, love has got to trump fear.
Yes.
Love has got to trump hate. It's the only, you know, if I don't channel my energy into something good, you know, something that helps people, then it's like, what am I doing? And then, you know, I did a post today and I talked about, you know, social media, it's all well and good and all of our pictures and great words, and it's great, but we need to do things. We need to take action. It's not enough to post on social media. We need to do something.
In your echo chamber.
Exactly. And this is what, and this is what it is for me. And this is, I mean, it's more than that. And I mean, I do believe that there's so much work to be done. There's so many things that we could do, but this is the focus of my energy. And I am going to help lift up our future, because the children are our future. That was
because Dustin and I, before we went on the air, we were saying, well, if this goes down the direction of talking about what's going on today, and that's totally fine, you know, what is the thing we can do? And you just said it. You're doing it. You're doing it.
Yeah.
You're doing it. So thank you for doing
it. Yeah. And there is so much to do. You just have to, you know, listen, it's being an activist for change and wanting to see change in the world. It's like, it's not easy. It's actually not easy. And it's, you know, I have to say, you know, over the course of the last couple of years, I mean, I would wake up every morning and be like, okay, is this the day that people are going to be on the streets? Is this the day?
Yeah.
Like, where's that day? Because I grew up, I mean, I'm a child of the 60s and 70s, right? I mean, I was out there marching on Washington when I was 13. So it's just like, I've been active all my life, and you know, and I can't believe what's been going on in the world, and yet it's like, where is the outrage? Like, we're all making ourselves sick because you know, if we're internalizing it, if we can't get out there and do something to help people, we have to help each other. And by the way, it also feels really good.
Yeah. It's a twofer. Right,
it is a twofer.
Let's and it's do just it. Like,
and I say that all the time when people go, oh my gosh, you're so selfless. You're just like, no, I'm not.
No.
This makes me happy. This is good for me. This is good for my heart and good for my soul. Yeah. And I promise you, if you do something, you will feel good too. And one of those things is helping my foundation.
Yes.
Well, from your words to the universe's ears, and hopefully we can blast all of this out and continue to create this positivity and keep it rolling, because we need more of this shit going on. And and to just fuel the passion. And the more fired up people are about doing a good thing in this world, the more that negativity will continue to get smaller and smaller and smaller. You just got to keep pushing. And it is hard work and it is effort. And clearly you're doing that. But thank God you are doing that. So, and thank God for being on our podcast to talk about it.
Well, and thank you. I can't thank you enough for giving me this platform and the time to, because I have done a lot of these and, you know, and rightfully so, everybody, you know, they want to focus on the movies and the, you guys have really given me a lot of time.
This is the best one you've been on, right?
And
that's where you're getting at.
I have to say, I mean, I appreciate the fact that you've given me this kind of time to talk about this and because it is important and it is especially important today, and everybody needs to go out and vote.
Yeah. I mean, look, you know, and I find myself a part of that as well, wanting to go down like more of a nostalgic trip. But at the same time, too, Dustin and I, one of the reasons why we decided to do this podcast was because we wanted to give people a sense of like the realness of who we have on our show. We want to talk about your career. That's fun. And the things we loved about it. But at the same time, too, like what makes you who you are? And who you are is a beautiful person, and it really I hope that you know, I hope this was worth your time, because it definitely was worth ours.
Oh, I mean, it really was.
Absolutely,
I very much appreciate it, and thank you, like really thank you for the real talk, I'm really grateful. I'm super grateful.
Well. Well, we would give each other all big virtual hugs right now, you know?
Okay, yeah.
But Joyce...
Virtual hugs.
Yeah, right?
Thanks.
To wrap up, thank you for being on our show. Where can we find you online?
Okay, well, although I'm really angry right now. I want to delete my Facebook, but I don't know that I will.
Yeah. Every day, I'm so close, Joyce. Every day.
Oh, yeah. I have two. One of them I did deactivate. The one with my fans is the one that I kept. So it's Joyce Heiser Robinson on Facebook. If you are not interested in my bleeding heart liberalism, you may not want to join my page. Although I'm very open to respectful debate. And I am, the Heis, HEISJHR at Instagram and on Twitter.
Great. All right. And then, like I said, we'll put those links on for your foundation, for the fundraisers.
Yeah. We're the Harold Robinson Foundation, Camp Ubuntu on Instagram and Harold Robinson Foundation on Facebook.
Awesome. And this is, you know, continue to stay in contact with each other. This is really...
Yes, please. I mean, Lisa and I, the director, have talked about that we're actually hoping to convince the studio maybe to even revisit this for our 40th anniversary.
For sure.
And really, really do it right. Make sure that the entire cast is available, and, you know, give it so that we can all do that. And do the, you know, do another release. I'm hoping with, you know, more like fun things in it that you're supposed to have in these. So,
yeah,
I mean, it's kind of crazy. I don't know if you, the DVD, the Blu-ray was released and it was sold out within 2 days.
Oh, and I believe it.
So, you know, I mean, it's just like, it's kind of crazy. And that it's like they were still 35 years later, they're underestimating this movie.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. I mean,
it's just, it's crazy. I mean, they were going to do a press junket. It was going to do, you know, a virtual press junket for the release. They never did it. I mean, it's crazy.
We'll figure out a way for our podcast to do it if the studio doesn't.
Okay, there you go.
$2 late fee. You hear $2, it first. We will present the 40th anniversary of Just One of the Guys.
Well,
in some way. Maybe even the 37th or the 38th, because we want to be different.
Yeah,
I'm gonna have my agent, Scott Ray, who's the guy who actually, I will say, you know, doggedly pursued me to start doing these conventions, the signing conventions that I started to do actually to raise money for my foundation. And that's, you know, kind of how I got on social media and started having a connection to my fans, which is just really, yeah, it's been a bright spot. So thank you.
Well, thank you for being open to this. And I know, you know, our mutual friend I asked her respectively if that was okay. And she's like, absolutely, I'll reach out. And, you know, I'm glad it worked out. And I'm glad we could reconnect. And I'm glad you remembered me.
I do. And thank you. And thank you for reaching out. And I could just keep saying, and, you know, it's important now. Yeah. By the way, it's important. It's important to also remember the great times, right?
Totally.
You know, who would have ever met in my wildest imagination in the 80s when we were making these kinds of movies that this is where we'd be right now. So it's just, we need the, you know, nostalgia is important.
Yeah.
So thank you. Thanks for providing it.
Absolutely. It's our
pleasure. Thank you.
But, all right. Well, let's say at the 40th year, we do this in studio.
That's a guarantee.
Yes.
And Joyce.
Do it with the cast. Yeah.
Oh, that sounds phenomenal. And thank you again. Thank you.
Yeah. Okay.
Thank you.
Well,
thank you.
From the heart. From the heart.
Likewise.
Thank you.
We'll talk to you soon. Okay.
Take care, guys.
You too.
All right.
Thanks, Joyce.
Bye.
All right. Thanks so much for listening. We really appreciate it.
Don't forget to subscribe and give us a Is it 5-star rating? Don't forget to subscribe and give us a 5-star rating on iTunes. Don't forget to subscribe and leave us a 5-star rating on iTunes. If you listen to us on Spotify, that's great too. And you can find us on the internet. Don't forget to check out our website at $2LateFee.com and follow us on Instagram and Facebook at $2LateFeePodcast. We'll see you next time.
We did it.
You're listening to the Geekscape Network.